Chapter 7. The Farm. The prison entrance was at the rear of the complex, tucked away in a back street. There, a single lane halted before a set of gates. The building's pinkish stone was infused with patches of blue algae. Pressing against the perimeter wall was a rust-colored tree. At its feet lay two hollowed-out branches, around which lay a plethora of curled golden-red leaves. A guard beckoned them through a vehicle scanner that arched overhead. The watchtower to Lucy's right was unmanned. The first guard made a cursory check of Harvey's security pass, greeting the director by name as he did so. Maurice leaned forward and made a point of introducing himself. The guard paid him little attention and signaled to his colleague to open the gate, which retracted sideways like a telescope. The group disembarked and approached the entrance. Lucy's heart sank as she took in the scale of the facility. She counted 7 floors on some of the buildings, which were packed tightly together. By her reckoning, if the place was even half full, they'd be looking at thousands of infecteds inside. The prison's reception had a welcome kiosk and a series of scanners and gates. The guard there waved them through casually. A faint dripping echoed from the corner of the ceiling where a fern was growing. Beads of liquid trickled from its vibrant green tips onto the floor, where they seeped into crevices beneath the walls.
"You're not gonna search us?" said Maurice.
"We ain't no prison for people no more. Y'all feel free to smuggle in whatever y'all like. Ain't gonna make no difference here," shrugged the guard. "Know where you're going?"
"We do, thank you," said Harvey.
They each took a pair of gloves and a mask from the kiosk, then passed through the turnstile one after another.
"Just a precaution, of course. Don't worry, all the patients are securely contained. It's not your conventional farm by any means, but we do what we can," said Harvey, striding into the first ward.
The corridor ahead was dark. Slits of daylight shone in from narrow windows at the tops of the walls. As they passed along the corridor, figures shuffled forwards from the cells. A fervor passed through the corridor as the residents realized they had visitors. Like meat through a mincer, a mass of arms stretched out between the bars lining each cell. Their skin was covered in lesions and blisters, and their parched voices grew increasingly desperate as they croaked for help.
"Do you feed them?"
said Maurice as they crossed the hallway.
"These subjects are at the first stage of their infection. From mine and Lucy's work on Patient Zero, we established that food deprivation can accelerate the disease. That is precisely what we want here. The quicker the subjects mature, the sooner we can harvest."
Lucy grimaced as she caught a waft of the prisoners' pungent, yeasty breaths. Their lips and tongues were cracked and blistered. 2 prisoners fought each other for access to a patch of wall where damp algae grew. The victor elbowed their rival out of the way and licked the blue stones thirstily.
"They look seriously dehydrated," said Karis.
"We restrict their water intake to a bare minimum at these early stages. It means the amount of pathogen in their bloodstream becomes more concentrated."
They reached the end of the ward, and Harvey swiped his pass, leading them into the next wing.
"This is where the magic starts to happen," he said with a wink.
Lucy drew her collar over her nose as the pungent stench of feces and urine hit her.
"These subjects are ready to be bled within the next 24 hours. Their delirium makes them weak, which helps with the harvest."
The wretched patients lay in the shadows, packed into overcrowded cells. They wallowed in their own bodily discharges, quivering with fever and muttering with delusions. Someone grunted from a cell up ahead. Lucy approached nervously. A thin woman covered in lesions was muttering to herself in between grunts. She was upright, but her leg was moving sporadically in sharp jerks. Beneath her lay another woman, motionless. Her face was bloodied and swollen, and her jaw broken. Her body pulsated with each impact as the muttering woman above her stamped down barefoot against her head. The pace was slow, a stamp every several seconds. The attacking woman was tired and held onto the bars for stability. She contemplated each move, cursing the woman beneath her before raising her heel once again. She seemed utterly impervious to the group's presence.
"Is that normal?"
said Maurice, following Lucy's gaze.
"It occurs in around 5% of the population. It is, of course, regrettable, but we lack the resources to monitor and isolate problematic subjects. Happily, 95% of subjects make it through to the processing room in acceptable health.
They ascended a staircase to the next level and doubled back on their original direction.
And this is where we invest our resources, said Harvey proudly.
Working the floor were a dozen or so technicians in full hazmat suits. The cells were much less crowded. There were only two patients in each. Both were strapped into the lowest bunks where an intravenous drip was threaded into their forearms. Maurice licked his lips nervously, trying to strike a breezy, entrepreneurial tone.
So how long does it take to bleed one of these infecteds dry?
Oh, we don't bleed them dry. We need to ensure we have a sustainable supply of their blood. We only take a pint or two from each subject. Then they're moved upstairs to the rehabilitation wards. They recover there for a few days. We give them a high-calorie liquid diet, administered in small doses to minimize waste from urination. Our preliminary findings suggest that infecteds can replenish their blood supply faster than humans.
Lucy tried to shut out Harvey's words and focus on her reconnoiter. It was clear the staff were not concerned about rioting or breakouts here. The emaciated inmates simply didn't have the strength. That was going to make evacuating them extremely difficult.
Faster than humans, you say? So what does that make these folk?
Said Maurice, picking up on Harvey's clinical detachment.
These subjects are no longer classed as genetically human. Their DNA has been irreversibly altered by this pathogen. A key outcome is that they've evolved to reproduce asexually, which is to say the pathogen has rendered them a distinct species. Of course, the silver lining for my lab is that these subjects no longer enjoy procreation through the civil liberties afforded to human subjects. What we do here is, of course, for our protection. It's done in service of those who remain biologically human. Don't you agree?
Totally, said Maurice.
His cool veneer faltered as he looked anxiously around the rows of bloodletting cells.
I trust you will report this all back to your queen. I'm keen to convey the sustainability of our supply chain. I understand that this was a key concern she had.
Yes, indeed. Plenty to report back on, said Maurice, slicking his hair back as his eyes darted around. Fortunately, the bloodletting appears to disrupt their breeding cycle, so subjects aren't needlessly expending energy on reproduction. However, your queen may be interested to know that we're actively exploring the possibility of next-generation rearing to see if we can optimize the yield. But I'm getting way ahead of myself. That is, of course, a much longer-term project. Perhaps we ought to stay focused on your immediate needs. Shall we press on? I think I'll pass. I've seen plenty to report back to my queen. Thank you, Director,
said Maurice, who by now looked positively queasy. Harvey graciously led the group back to reception, sparing Maurice no detail of his lab's capabilities along the way. Using the prison facility and the adjacent repurposed youth correctional center, they were currently processing around 9,000 infecteds, each of whom produced around 2 liters of blood a week. Harvey said they were still ramping up production, but he expected them to reach optimal output within a fortnight. The government, he said proudly, had just commissioned a full rotating program of his blood bags, declaring that every on-duty soldier must be equipped with fresh, protective blood for each shift. He assured Maurice that the Queen would, therefore, be getting state-of-the-art defensive technology, with a 100% success rate of deterrence against contact creatures.
So we have a deal, then, said Harvey as they returned to the prison forecourt.
We have a deal, Director. An impressive facility. My queen will be thrilled. Are you on track for the first shipment?
Said Maurice, assuming his finest sales patter.
We're due to transfer it to the bottling plant tomorrow at noon, said Harvey, beaming.
Naturally, I'll need to oversee the transfer of the collected, produce from here to the packaging facility. A condition of my queen. You understand.
Of course. One must always have confidence in a supplier. I'll let the guards know to expect you tomorrow.
A technician passed by wheeling a corpse on a trolley. The body was ghostly pale, and a slit ran across the width of their neck. Maurice let out a disconcerted groan.
Don't be alarmed. He's perfectly harmless, chuckled Harvey.
I thought you didn't bleed them dry,
said Maurice, trying not to gag.
The subject's blood pressure naturally drops during the bloodletting. Occasionally, this proves fatal, and in those instances, we take something of a waste-not-want-not approach. To that end, this body will now be incinerated, providing vital energy for the city. This individual has given much for us to be grateful for.
Lucy stared at the prison grimly. Just as it had done in Boston, fear had poisoned the minds of the healthy humans. It had turned them against their infected neighbors. This building was just the beginning. For so long, she'd been deluding herself that she could reverse the tide if she just got the right evidence to the right people. But all of her efforts had come to nothing. She had to intervene decisively. If they were going to liberate the people inside, it was going to be a mammoth task, and she couldn't do it alone. It was time to call in whatever favors she had left.